Hi everyone, welcome to Health Bunker Podcast. And this is another health podcast, and I'm your host Dom, and I hope everyone's in good health. Some of you will know me from our other podcast I run with my brother Chris, called Sheep Farm Studios. Health Bunker Podcast will be solely devoted to health. These podcasts will be around 45 minutes long, covering many different health issues and health conditions. I will be talking with guests who are doctors, naturopaths, nutritionists, supplement and equipment manufacturers, authors and other health related people. Health Bunker is a wellness clinic based in Halifax, West Yorkshire, where we use ozone and IV nutrition therapies, including high dose vitamin C. We also have Health Bunker supplements that offer a range of well sourced UK made supplements. Links will be in the bio for all Health Bunker products and info, and for all listeners there is a 25% off discount code for all supplements bought. Today I'll be talking to functional health practitioner Dr. Ailsa Kerr from my hometown in Huddersfield. In the podcast, Ailsa explains her background in functional health, which in the past both me and my wife found very useful in our recovery from chronic Lyme disease and ill health. I will be recording more of these podcasts in the coming weeks, as these health podcasts have been continually requested. So I hope you enjoy this podcast and we'll see you soon. All right, welcome to another Health Bunker health podcast, I suppose it is, a spin-off from our usual sheep farm. It's me on my own. Our Chris isn't here, opening his bottle of witch piss, his bottle of wine, which I try and talk him out of, but he's not listening to me, but there you go. At least it's just one bad habit he's got, apart from listening to me, that is. But today we've got someone I've known for quite a while now, actually, who I've been sort of nagging to get on over a space of a year, and she's finally got a mic and some headphones. I'd like to introduce Dr. Ailsa Kerr.
Hi. Thank you for asking me to come on. It's my pleasure.
It's all right. It's difficult, isn't it, to change? I know when we started the podcast, it's difficult to think about how it can be quite nerve-wracking getting on a podcast, can't it?
Absolutely.
But when you've done a couple, there's naturally nothing to them, is there? Because you're only explaining what you're actually doing on a daily basis.
Exactly.
And we did a live show last night, me and Chris, with a chap called Matt Landman, and we did it on spec. It was like, should we do it live? Yeah, let's just do it live on YouTube. Before, I had to work my way up to doing something like that, you know, to get rid of and be totally organized and have, you know, what we're going to talk about written down and that. And now you can just turn up and have a discussion for an hour.
Absolutely. And, you know, back in the day when I was an NHS GP, I didn't feel like I had the confidence to speak in public, even in meetings with people I knew very well. I didn't really have the confidence. But now, because I'm very passionate about what I do, I feel so much better able to speak about what I'm doing.
And not only that, you've got vast experience. You're pulling on all them years of experience, aren't you, as well? And also, probably you weren't, I don't know, with what we've just gone through for over the last 3 or 4 years, I think a lot of us are speaking out now and putting our head above the parapet, aren't we?
Yes, peaking above.
Exactly. And we don't do it in his own little ways as well. I mean, I like my research. You're doing it in your way. We all chip away at doing everything. And together, we're one big group, aren't we, I suppose?
Absolutely. You know, we're all facets of the same shape or piece of the puzzle.
The same control system. But yeah, we have been through a lot. Let's start at the beginning then. Where did you start? I know we're from the same town, roughly.
Yeah, not originally. I was born in Scotland, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, then grew up in North Yorkshire.
Right.
Went to med school in Leeds and then did a house job in Huddersfield, a house job in Bradford, trained as a GP in Bradford. Did locums for a couple of years and then went to a practice in Huddersfield.
Right.
So, and I spent almost 27 years in that practice.
I mean, the odd thing is you were my wife's doctor.
Yeah, so it turns out.
Yes. And one of the nurses that work in the clinic works at your practice as well.
She was a midwife attached to the surgery, yeah.
Small world, isn't it?
Synchronicities.
And all of us, like my wife, the nurse, all of us thinking the same way. It's strange, isn't it? So all the same people are come together again, if in a way. Yeah. So what, going back to GP, was there an inkling at any point that you would actually come over to alternative medicine or whatever you want to call it? Classic. I don't like calling it alternative because that means it's like second best. But anyway.
Yeah, I think people call it more integrative practices, which I think is maybe better accepted. I think it was back in about 2004, I trained in Western medical acupuncture because I was seeing people who they struggled to tolerate pain relief, or the pain relief didn't work very well for them. And I wanted to look at something that was an alternative. And obviously that raised my awareness of flows of energy, things that we'd never been taught about the energy meridians.
Witchcraft.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But back then, they were using acupuncture in some of the pain clinics in hospitals, so there was some acceptance. And I ran quite a successful acupuncture clinic for about 10 years. And then really the workload was such we struggled to recruit GPs. And then they said, well, they also, you are not getting paid anything for this. We're actually funding the acupuncture. But they weren't really looking at the big picture as to, I suppose it was difficult to quantify how much the prescribing costs had reduced or how much appointment times had been reduced or hospital referrals, but they just knew that we were paying for it.
They look at the cold, hard accountancy side of it. Yeah,
exactly.
As opposed to the benefits. It's strange that a system that's meant to be for the people, that's not run for profit, is solely about profit from the ground up and the top down. But we're not going to talk about the NHS because that's not what we're here for today.
No. That would make it a very long episode.
But yeah, it would, yeah. It'd be the bottomless pit episode, probably. So, I mean, that's 20 years ago. That's some time ago when you started actually thinking. How long had you been a doctor at that point?
So I qualified in 89.
So right, so
a long time ago.
Well, I mean, you're sort of 15 years in and all of a sudden you're starting to think, look over the fence, so to speak, and probably not knowing that you were looking over the fence, just doing it from actually trying to help people.
Yeah, yeah. And I also explored a little bit around grounding.
Right, yeah.
So I'd been made aware of grounding or earthing, and I got some free mats from one of the companies to try out with patients, and I even did a little mini trial with my patients.
Yeah.
Sent them away with an earthing mat and got them to fill in a questionnaire. And, you know, they noticed improved sleep and
we've got one on our bed.
Pain. Yeah, we have too.
Yeah, 100% helps sleep. 100%. I've noticed a massive difference since we've...
And you dream loads more as well.
Yeah, yeah. Hopefully not about my brother. That might be a cost of the nightmare, but yeah. But Earth, I mean, all these things, I mean, are looked at as, I mean, I was joking when I said witchcraft, but they are looked at as, well, in the mainstream medical fraternity. And how many of these things are there? I mean, just behind me, I've got a red light bed, I've got an infrared sauna. At the clinic, we've got an infrared sauna, we do, and that's just us little messing, I suppose, I won't call it messing about, but our little treatment centres, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
There's literally hundreds of other things that you can try, from supplements to equipment, aren't there? And you'd picked on those two from an energy perspective, haven't you? They're energy. That's energy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which I presume is what most things are about, really. If you drilled right down to the bottom, it's blocked energy, probably.
Yes. Yeah. Because we are 99.9999% energy.
Bet you weren't taught that at doctor school either.
No.
So when was the big shift then? So you've done the acupuncture in 2004. When was the...
Yeah, the big shift was really when I developed some symptoms of ill health. And I'd actually had back in 1991, I was diagnosed with thyroid cancer.
Right.
And nothing switched me on to think about, well, actually, what's caused that? So, you know, I talk to my patients now about your body is sending you messages and sometimes it has to shout louder than others. And my body was shouting at me that, you know, you need to look at what's going on underneath. But I didn't listen at that point. And I think it was about 2009 when I just had awful fatigue, terrible brain fog. I really struggled to drive. And then I developed neurological symptoms, kind of buzzing sensations under one foot. I had this itching in my foot that woke me up at night, and all I could do was get up and put an ice pack on it. So sleep was terrible.
Sounds like the symptoms I had when with Lyme disease.
Yeah.
Is that honestly?
I had sensations of running water down my back. And I went to the GP and thought I had MS, which was quite frightening. And I hated being on the other side, being a patient. It, you know, I'd always prided myself in being this resilient person. And all their tests were negative. And they said, oh, I think you're just stressed. And I thought, well, the only thing that's stressing me is not knowing what's wrong.
Yeah.
And at that point, I'd been sort of toying with the idea of going to this environmental medicine clinic, which at that time was out in Keighley, because this pamphlet had landed on my desk at work. And I kept on looking at it. And then ultimately, I said, right, I'm going to book an appointment. So I went along. And, you know, I had this hour long appointment and I was really listened to and understood. And, you know, I had some more functional testing done, which found I had food sensitivities, I had heavy metals, I had a parasite, I had candida, nutrient deficiencies, you know, all these different imbalances. And as we started to correct things, I was feeling so much better. And I thought, wow, I need to find out more about this. And that really started me on this journey of wanting to learn more. So I was going on courses, I was reading books, listening to podcasts, reading, you know, doing webinars, going on training courses. So I trained with the British Society of Ecological Medicine. I did their diploma, and I trained with the Institute of Functional Medicine. And really through that, I found a group of like-minded doctors, and I work with some of them now. It's amazing.
The white elephants, aren't they? The rarities, aren't they?
But it is, you know, it's spreading. So I started to think, well, maybe I can use some of these techniques in general practice, but that became increasingly hard because you have these guidelines, protocols, and the things that I was wanting to do were not in any of those guidelines or protocols. So
I bet they weren't even in that you couldn't do them. They weren't even recognized, were they?
No.
Yeah.
And it causes quite a lot of conflict in your head because you're thinking, I know something that I really think will help you. But firstly, are you going to be receptive? Secondly, how do I document it in the notes without somebody else criticizing me? How will it be viewed by my colleagues? How do I follow this person up to see whether it's worked? Because we weren't encouraged to really have repeat appointments.
Well, I mean, the internal conflict there for a doctor. I mean, again, given what we've just gone through, the internal conflict for a doctor must be pretty horrendous. For someone like me, a layman, it's pretty easy. That ain't working. I'll try that. Apart from your ego, there's no actual conflict there. To try something, nobody's going to sack me for doing it or give me a warning or anything like that. I can just try it. But for a professional, I mean, I talked to Mike Eden. Me and Chris talked to him a few weeks ago, and he was head of vaccine development. For him to move there, that's a big shift. Like for you to move to where you've gone, really, isn't it? It's like a seismic shift. Because I mean, the training that you guys go through, it's not just right. We'll teach you how to put a light bulb in. How long is the training to be a doctor? When you went through it?
It's five years at medical school, and then we did a year of house jobs, and then three years GP training.
Right. So, I mean, it's pretty in-depth, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, as in-depth as it can be. So I mean, that's pretty. You've done quite a lot of stuff while you were actually still a doctor, didn't you? So it
Yeah.
wasn't just right, I'm leaving, I'm doing this now.
Yeah. I mean, I'm still a GMC registered doctor, but
Yeah.
I made the decision to retire from the NHS.
Yeah. So what does that mean then? Does that
So,
mean you can still practice as a doctor?
oh
Yeah.
yeah, I'm still practicing as a doctor.
I sort of know that. I just wanted to let people know.
Yeah.
But
So I'm no longer on the performers list to be a GP. So I work entirely in functional medicine now.
yeah. I mean, like I say, there are a few people like yourself who have sort of jumped ship, but a lot of them haven't entirely jumped ship, have they? They still took part in 2020 as well, if you like, in 2021, and got their arms indoctrinated, sadly. But yeah, I know a lot of people in my world, in the sort of natural health world, who were into ozone. They were all getting jabbed as well, which I found a bit strange. But anyway, that was another one. But we won't go into the jabs at this particular point. So when did you decide that you were going to make that jump and go into full-time sort of functional medicine?
Well, I think it had always been my plan, and so I gradually started easing myself over. So initially, I was doing the environmental medicine stuff on my day off. So I did 4 days a week as a GP and one day in environmental medicine. And then it became two and three, and then two and two, and I actually took a day off.
So, when you
And
say
now,
environmental medicine, what was environmental medicine? What's that
it's
classed as?
really looking at how the environment affects our health. So a lot of it was around allergies and toxins. Not quite so much around the gut and infections, but we were influencing the immune system using some immunotherapy techniques. We gave IVs. We did detox. So some people we gave detox drips to.
What sort of drips were you giving at that point? And I'm not only interested because you know why I'm interested because
Yeah. So we use the Myers mix
yeah.
and their other range of drips. We were giving glutathione pushes, phosphatidylcholine.
Yeah, they all work very well, those. Yeah.
We
Yeah.
use some DMSA as well for heavy
Right, okay.
metals.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, heavy metal, getting rid of heavy metals is really important, but that'll be another show, no doubt.
Yeah.
Can you explain what a functional doctor is? I mean, I sort of
Yeah.
know that because I've seen a few over the past, whatever, 10 years, but is it a relatively new thing?
It's relatively new in the UK. I think it's been around 20 plus years in the States, and that's where the training has come from. I think this year, my colleague, Dr. Inder at the practice, has been part of a group who have set up the British College of Functional Medicine, which has now been recognised by the GMC as being a legitimate speciality.
Good.
So it's aiming to set the standards in the UK for functional medicine, so it's not viewed as being quackery. Because if you read what it says on Wikipedia about functional medicine, we keep changing it, but somebody keeps changing it back.
The Google fairies,
Yeah. So
or
funk.
the barn wall writers.
Yeah. So functional medicine is it, we call it root cause medicine. So if you imagine that you have a fire in your living room and you see this smoke, rather than just opening the window or wafting the smoke away, you need to actually go and see what's on fire. Yeah.
Yep.
So it's called functional medicine because we're looking at how the body is functioning, and our body's a whole and all of the systems are connected. So the seven physical areas of function are digestion and absorption, because if you're not digesting and absorbing your food properly, that's where all the raw materials come from for cellular repair and all the different biochemical reactions. Next is the immune system. And we actually know that a lot of the immune cells reside in the gut. So you can see how those two systems connect. Then mitochondrial function, how our bodies produce energy. detoxification, how we get rid of the things. You know, I liken the detox system a bit like a recycling plant, where we're looking to see what we can keep and recycle and what needs chucking in the bin.
Yeah, the holographic universe. Our bodies are like the natural world, or even the manufactured world. What we are inside is manufactured outside, like computers, obviously modeling your brain and your nervous system, et cetera, et cetera. And then we match nature, don't we? Breathing and tides are a similar sort of process. But anyway, sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cycles of the moon.
Yes. Yeah.
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 And then body transport system. So that's the cardiovascular system, the lymphatics, hormones. So that includes neurotransmitters, adrenal hormones, thyroid hormones, blood sugar balance, sex hormones, and then structural integrity, which is everything from tiny, tiny things like cell membranes right up to, do you have all your internal organs, arms and legs, fingers and toes? And then at the center of that matrix, we very much consider a person's mental, emotional and spiritual health, because we know that significant stress and trauma has an effect on our physical health.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's pretty, I know when I went through the process going back in 2016, it was pretty in depth. And it was also, for me, quite enlightening, because like yourself, although obviously you come from a medical background, I didn't. I was listening to podcasts, listening to people doing seminars and all this, reading books and things like that, testing things out on myself and whatnot. Didn't have a clue what we're doing, by the way. Just that worked. Oh, I'll try that again. Put that to one side, you know. So it was a rudimentary way of looking at it. But this was a pretty in-depth, an overwhelming, for me, because I was ill at the time, an overwhelming prospect at times. But it was quite, I learned a lot is what I'm trying to say. A hell of a lot from the process going through it myself.
And I think part of the way our functional medicine team interacts with our patients is that we're trying to teach them to be their own health detective, because it's not us that heal somebody, they heal themselves. You know, we're just there to be part of their journey, to give them pointers in the right direction.
I nearly went and studied to do a course, but you know, for me, I didn't think it were for me, to be honest with you. I don't think I've got the patience to deal with people. You've got to have a different kind of person to deal with people, because it's frustrating when you mention to people that you're going to have to change your life. They're seriously ill and they're not willing to change their life. I'm from a business background. You do what you need to do to build a business, if you like. Or if you're a sports person, you do what you need to do to get to over the finish line. People aren't willing to do that. It must be pretty frustrating, that, for you guys at times.
But I think we have discovery calls with patients, so that we get an idea of whether they're ready.
Right, right. So you've sort of mapped out when people are ready to do certain things.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Still must be difficult. You've got patience of a saint, in my opinion.
But also, you know, going to a functional medicine practice is quite a significant financial investment, because of the time that we spend with our patients. You know, we're interpreting quite complex results. We're having discussions as a team. We're preparing reports. We're writing to specialists. We're researching supplements or medications or interactions. So if you're investing that amount of money in your health, you need to be ready to follow it through, really.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you do need to be ready, but some people still aren't, because it is from where they've been to where they are. I think people have to get the mindset around that it's total life changing. You can't go back to where you were sometimes.
But we're very used to absolving responsibility for our health to somebody else. You go to the doctor's surgery and you say, give me a pill, doctor.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, I'm diabetic, but if I take my medication, I can eat what I want. You know.
Yeah.
I'm on a statin, I can still have a bacon sandwich, whatever.
Yeah, and a candy floss and an hot dog. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, it is, yeah. So we've sort of covered the functional and medicine side, but there's a whole, what opened my eyes was the amount of testing. When I I got into sort of learning about functional health, or that there was actually something called functional health and functional doctors, from a seminar I heard about gluten intolerance. Now, I knew I had a gluten intolerance, didn't quite know how bad it was, but I found a test called Cyrex, which you'll no doubt use, which is probably one of the better tests for gluten intolerance. I think it was designed, the whole company was designed around that test, weren't it? An American company. And that's what got me into it. Sometimes you just need that door to open and a whole world opens up. And the testing that you guys use is pretty in-depth, isn't it?
Yeah.
Not like the stupid PCR thing that people were having to do to go on holiday 2 years ago. That's not, again, they're not the same test, are they? They're not even in the same world.
No. And I think the other thing to say is that even if we're doing blood panels, we're looking at much tighter optimal ranges. So if you think about a normal distribution curve, so it's a bell-shaped curve, you have the mean down the middle, and then you have one standard deviation above and below the mean and two standard deviations above and below the mean. So the NHS normal ranges are two standard deviations above and below the mean, which encompass 95% of the population. So the functional ranges are much tighter, one standard deviation above and below the mean.
Yeah.
Which means that you see more nuances really as to what's going on. Because certainly when back in GP days, some of my colleagues would be reading a test result and it might be just one point inside the normal range and they would just mark it as normal. Whereas I would want to talk to the patient and actually find out whether they had symptoms of that.
Yeah, to back it up with. So you've got the blood test and you want the symptomatic test, if you like.
Yeah. I think you've always got to take the clinical picture into account with the test results.
Well, when my wife was pregnant with our son, she was diagnosed as just gestational diabetic. But she'd got no symptoms or signs that, and the baby was bang smack in the middle of every reading and growth scan and all that type of stuff. But they still went through the process that she was gestational diabetic.
Mm.
And we found out after she was dehydrated. And she started drinking, obviously, upping her water levels. And when she went back for the test, she was fine. But they still went through the same process. But anyway, that is where we're at, isn't it? Where they're that scared, I think, of something going wrong. They've got to stick with that one diagnosis.
But, I suppose they would be criticised if they didn't pick it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but some of the tests, like when I did my gluten test, the test showed I was more or less at that particular point celiac, which no wonder I'm feeling a bit grim. and taking everything out of your diet that includes wheat products is a minefield on its own without everything else that you have to do for people. Because everywhere you go to eat, going back to what I'm saying, how hard it is for people to change, and you know this because you've been through your own health. As you mentioned before, change your diet and things like that. That everything you eat's got, it seems that way when you first start, has got wheat products and stuff like that in. That's without taking sugar out and alcohol and all the other things that you don't want in your system. But where do you start then? If you've got, I suppose it's difficult to answer that, but is there a process where you'd start? Somebody rang you today, said, I feel like crap. Is there a starting process there? Just to give people an idea of where it would start if they decided to ring a practice like yours.
Prior to an initial consultation, we get people to fill in a medical symptom questionnaire, which just gets you to score the severity of your symptoms. So you come out with a total score, which gives you an indication of how inflamed somebody is. Mm. And then we have a basic intake form, which allows us to prepare for that initial appointment. So our initial appointments are 90 minutes long. So during that time, we're asking about a person's history from even before they were born, about their family history, about their mother's health, because we know that the baby's immune system learns from the mother's immune system in utero and through the birth process. They're inoculated with hopefully healthy bacteria from the gut, from the birth canal, or actually, babies who are born by cesarean section are far more likely to be colonized with bacteria from the staff in that delivery room.
Right. Well, our Christian, I think, were born cesarean. That answers another question. When I stop at traffic lights, he gets out at the sunroof. Now I know why. Now I know why.
Yes,
but yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Well, where do you stand then? I mean, when we went through 2020, there was a big hit, and I'll start on 2020, then I'll go backwards in time. But the germ theory versus terrain theory, because it as soon as 2020 hit and all the stuff started in March 2021, a lot of things came out about germ theory versus terrain theory. And terrain theory was something I got into going back into the late 2000s when I realised that my terrain was all over the place. And there is something, personally, I've got a different opinion of that germ theory doesn't exist, germs can't harm you, et cetera, et cetera. Because in all things equal, if your immune system was running correctly, they probably don't harm you or harm you to the extent that you think they would. But again, if you throw bioweapons into it, throw in the depletion of our systems with various environmental factors, then and that the actual bacteria is in a place where it shouldn't be, as opposed to in a normal place, say the gut. If it's leaky gut and it ends up in areas where it shouldn't be, then that's a whole different factor, in my opinion. You can't just say bacteria is at all beneficial. Anyway, where do you sit on that side?
I agree that the terrain is super important. You know, the gut health, the microbiome, wherever that is. You know, we don't just have a microbiome in the gut. We have a microbiome in the mouth. We have a microbiome on the skin, up the nose.
Yeah.
It's about looking after.
Possibly in the brain.
The good guys and making sure that they're happy and healthy. So the analogy that I use with my patients is to think about the microbiome, wherever it is, as being a bit like a human city. You want the vast majority of people in that city to be living in harmony, to all be doing their own little jobs.
Yes.
What you don't want is too many of the troublemakers that come in and increase the crime rate.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Yeah.
Yeah. So you want to provide the food for the good guys, and you want to reduce the food coming in for the bad guys. So things like sugar, we know, feeds the outlying
outlaws.
The outlaws.
Yeah.
But healthy foods, real foods, whole foods, high fiber foods, foods of different colors with all the lovely phytonutrients in, we know they feed the good guys. And taking things out that kill off the good guys. So I did a talk last year at a cardiology conference, and I was coming at it from the viewpoint of nitric oxide, which we produce in the mouth through chewing our food. And it's the action of the healthy bacteria in the mouth that produces this nitric oxide, which causes the blood vessels to dilate. And if you use antibacterial mouthwashes, you don't produce as much nitric oxide. So just a simple thing that you can do is cut out the antibacterial mouthwashes, and it will have a positive effect on your blood pressure.
Yeah, that's just one thing, isn't it?
Simple thing that you can do.
Yeah.
So I called my talk Pieces of Cake. So, you know, all the pieces make a whole cake, but each piece of cake is literally a piece of cake. It's something simple that you can do.
Yeah. I think if we look at all this stuff, most of it's simple. It's most of it's taking it out of your diet, the stuff you don't actually need in the first place.
Yeah.
So it's actually the known knowns. If you can control the known knowns, you're going to be in a lot better place, aren't you?
Yeah.
And we all know sugar's bad for us. We all know excess alcohol. Are you listening, Chris? It's bad for you. we all know smoking's bad for you. We all know these things that we can control ourselves are bad for us. So, and also gluten, all these things, other stuff that everyone likes, bread's nice. But if you think to yourself, I'm never going to eat sugar again, it's probably terrifying. And it probably would have been for me 10 years ago. But now I don't eat it, so it's not... Mm.
I think over time, yeah, I call it down titrating your taste buds.
Right.
You know, now if somebody were to give me a piece of Mars bar or something like that, I'd be like, oh, horrible.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, my view on people's health, going back to the terrain theory versus germ theory, is one, they're both theories still. So you can't say one's right or the other's right. That's, and now, can you see a virus through a microscope? That's another question I suppose people ask. But viruses and bacteria are two different things anyway, two different conversations, aren't they? I don't even want to get into viruses. I've got my own views on what they mean of viruses. But bacteria and parasites. Parasites, honestly, I know it's a horrible subject for people to... I hope nobody's listening while they're having their dinner or anything, but I've passed literally thousands of the damn things since I started parasite cleansing. And this was going back to 2017 when I found mimosa. And other herbs as well, but mainly mimosa and ozone, especially ozonated water, ironically. Mm. Drinking glasses of ozonated water and mimosa seem to do the trick, if that's the right way of putting it. But parasites, I think, are one of the main causes of illness, especially in the state that people's immunity is at the moment. They probably do. Maybe I'm one of the worst cases, or somewhere in the middle. I don't know. But both me and my wife have passed thousands, and she's only a little thing. But where do you sit on parasites? Well, is that the right way of putting it?
I think through my training, we've mainly looked at parasites through testing stool. And I know we've had a discussion before that the parasites aren't necessarily in the gut, that they might be tucked away somewhere nice and cozy, like the liver.
Yeah. And other places. Yeah. Especially nutritious places.
Yeah. I have an open mind about it, but I've not had the same experience as you with mimosa, but maybe I've not pushed the dose high enough.
I didn't take massive doses, to be honest with you. Probably a couple of capsules a day, maximum. Three, maybe most, but I suppose you're doing other things as well. And maybe the effect of mimosa worked on me differently. Because that's another thing with supplements. People say, oh, they don't work, them supplements. No, because not everything works for you. Everyone's slightly different out there. Some people get more out of another thing. Maybe you've got to try an actual pharmaceutical wormer, like the stuff they've been talking about over the last 2 or 3 years to see any benefits. Because these are all generic drugs; they're not harmful drugs. Obviously, everything is if you take it in excess anyway. But you know, taking an aspirin, if you take one aspirin, it's not going to harm you. If you take 10 a day, you might start having problems. These are all tried and proven drugs. Everyone runs away from drugs, but I don't take any, but I'm not scared of the thought that I might have to do, depending on what they are, by the way.
Yeah, exactly.
If it's a last resort type thing. But parasites is a good conversation, and it's something I'm going to do probably a podcast on, a presentation on. I've got all the pictures to show as well and prove.
Oh, nice.
I know. there was a lady, I've got a video on the website. She was called, I keep forgetting her name. Anyway, they actually got a child who's autistic, and her husband is some kind of biologist or something. Anyway, they froze them all. They put them in cups individually, washed them, and froze them all in the freezer. They've got thousands of these parasites, and they've tested them to see what the contents are, and they found all sorts of things inside them, like lime rods, that she were calling them, all sorts of different toxins that they're carrying within them. They're like blooming aircraft carriers, just dropping a payload off even there.
So how do we know that the parasites are doing us harm? Is it a symbiotic sort of thing? Because we know that our bodies are always trying to bring us back into balance.
Well, look, from a personal experience, the one thing I realised is I started feeling better. Mm. Now, whether that was psychological because I saw these things coming out, I don't know. But I did start feeling better. There was a direct link to feeling better and getting rid of these things.
Because there was some research in inflammatory bowel disease where they, was it pinworm or something that they gave them, and they noticed a reduction in the inflammation.
Right. Again, like we say, I think is it RH negative blood types can get rid of parasites a lot better than RH positive blood types. So there is something in. Not everything works for everybody. So maybe some parasites work well in certain individuals, and in others they don't. Or if you've got a certain thing wrong with you, or if they end up in the wrong place, like your brain or your.
And maybe it's to do with the total load. It's about, you know, keeping them as a as an outlaw.
Yeah, exactly.
Not,
yeah,
not as a predominant population.
Well, you like the again, the pirates in the old world were used by the governments of the world as parts of their armed forces, raiders, and maybe your body uses parasites as a similar thing in a perfect world. But when you're compromised, maybe that's when they start becoming an issue.
It's
but
about
yeah,
balance, isn't it?
Yeah. So, do you want to give people any contact details where they can contact you at the practice that you're at?
Yeah, so I work with the Dr. Indra, that's INDRA, Specialist Functional Medicine Practice. So we're a multidisciplinary team. We have a clinic based just the other side of Leeds, so it's just off the M62. I think it's Junction 30. And we also do video calls for people who aren't close by. We have three GPs. We have a consultant psychiatrist, a consultant endocrinologist who are all trained in functional medicine. We have a lovely nutritional therapist, and we have three health coaches. So one of our health coaches is also a personal trainer. Another one has a psychotherapy background, and she does work with EFT, EMDR, hypnotherapy. And our third health coach, Bobby, is also a pharmacist and an Ayurvedic medicine practitioner.
So a big wide range and scope of people you've got there, isn't it? A full team, so to speak.
Yeah. And we do have a mental health pathway, which involves our psychiatrist plus one of the GPs, nutritional therapist and coach. So it's quite intensive care, but it's very supportive for those that need it.
Yeah, one of the things questions I've been asked by a lot of listeners, female listeners, is about HRT, female going through the change, as they call it, and that might be a good podcast at some point because
because as you know, it's one of my areas of special interest. So I have another job which is working in a dedicated bioidentical hormone clinic. We also have a bioidentical hormone service within the Dr. Indra team. And I do a little bit of work with a local community organization. We have a program called Moving Through Menopause, which is based at the local climbing gym. So people can come along and learn to climb, educate themselves about the menopause, learn some Pilates and breath work and some nutritional stuff.
Is there some sort of synchronicity there, climbing the walls?
maybe. Yeah. But I think, you know, in terms of the modifiable lifestyle factors that are important for building your health, it ticks a lot of the boxes.
It does, yeah. It certainly
because
does.
Because it's around movement and nutrition and
stretching, you know, and all sorts of stuff, yeah.
Stress is such a huge factor for hormone imbalance. And then the communities that form. We've got groups from our programs last year who are still in contact with each other.
Yeah. Do you think people are starting to go through these changes earlier nowadays?
Yeah, definitely. But yeah. I think some of that has to do with the chemicals in the environment.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, or whatever it is. When we say chemicals, it could be the nice masks that they keep throwing up everywhere as well. The EMFs that are contributing to some of this. So, I mean, chemical overload, radiation overload, et cetera, et cetera. All of the above are probably in question, aren't they? They have to be. The inoculations, et cetera, et cetera. Everything's got to be in question because how far would you say, because when I were young, I know everyone seemed older when you were a teenager or what have you, but when you heard your mum talking about stuff like this, it were more people who were, seemed a lot older than people now. People seem to be starting going through this in the mid 30s, ladies, and younger.
Yeah.
And it is terrible as well. It's not a nice, obviously, it's not, most of these things aren't nice. I mean, Lyme disease won't be nice, but to have that and it kickstart that as well early is.
But I think maybe there's a number of things going on because I think that modern women are so, I don't say indoctrinated, but that we're expected to have so many different roles. We're juggling so many different things. I think one of the menopause books I've got, there's a whole chapter called Rushing Woman Syndrome. You know, and we are literally rushing from one thing to another. We never really have a chance to
Breathe.
stop and reflect and breathe and look after ourselves.
Well, again, we could get into a whole raft of things like from the after post-war, how the whole society changed. There's nothing, everybody should be allowed to work and things like that, but everything changed so quickly. Right, you've got to work. Now women are forced to work because financially they cannot work, not work. So it's two different from having a choice to work to having no choice to work, but to work, should I say, because now there is no choice. You've got to put your kids in early childcare and you're working for half the amount because you amount the childcare costs. So the pressure that that puts on you to start with is a big stress, alone without everything else. Anyway, there I go. I'll get off my soapbox. The whole system is set up to, I can't say set up to fail. It's not failing. It's actually succeeding
But
for some
it's the
somebody.
breakup of the families as well,
Yes.
because kids go off to university and then they don't come back home. They
Yes.
get jobs wherever. So when they do have families, they've not got that extended family to help out with the childcare.
Yeah. I mean, who would that benefit? Well, if you look at, say, the miners' strike, and although they got done over, and we're drifting off into another world here, but they don't want that type of generational army. Because they looked after each other, you know. They want people split up. They don't want that a load of people from Barnsley who know each other, three generations down, fighting the government because there's too much passion there for the government to handle. But that's another story, isn't it? Okay, then. I'll put all the contact details in that in the description. But thanks for joining us.
Fabulous.
We'll pick on a couple of subjects next time that we want a couple of. Illnesses. I think the one we did pick on there, I can't really call. Can you call it going through the change in illness?
No, it's not an illness.
No, I'm
It's a
going to say it's not
natural
an ill. Yeah,
process.
I'm going to say it, but I suppose if it's been brought forward, it's some there's something else happening, isn't there? You could,
Yeah,
yeah.
it's
But
a
anyway,
maybe a hormonal imbalance.
yeah. But anyway, we'll pick on a few subjects. I think next time. Although you're quite busy at the minute because you're opening something else up, aren't you? Just to add to another list of this.
And something that will help with those EMFs and 5G frequencies.
Yeah, and we need someone to help us with that. So, well, thanks for joining us, Ailsa.
My
And
pleasure.
no problem. And thanks for listening and tuning in. And we'll see you next time. So, we've come to the end of this episode. To look up Dr. Ailsa's links, they're all in the bio and the show notes. Please note, although me and my wife run Health Bunker Clinic offering ozone and IV wellness therapies, we do not offer diagnostic or consultative health services. So, that's all we have time for. Join us next time on Health Bunker Podcast, when we take control of our own health.